We kick off hour number two of the program. This segment brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Check them out online at tvacreditunion.com. It's the official credit union of 3NOUT. And right now they're celebrating Christmas in July with a Christmas Club savings account. All balances earn dividends, perfect to alleviate holiday spending, no monthly fees. And you can get signed up and become a member and take advantage of all the great services at the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Just go to tvacreditunion.com for all the details. It's the official credit union of 3NOUT, the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. So it's SEC Media Days today. Starts with Dan Mullen, Ed Orgeron, and Barry Odom. Jeremy Pruitt goes tomorrow. We've got Trey Wallace on the scene down in Hoover, Alabama. For all that, it's the unofficial start of the 2019 college football season. Steve Spurrier once called it talking season.
He was good at that.
But as Houston pointed out, once talking season gets here, even if it's not that great, it means fall camp, fall practice is right around the corner. They'll sneak up on you quick. The fan day is on a Sunday coming up on August the 4th. I mean, that's less than 3 weeks away now.
Yikes.
It's not that long. It's right here.
Sunday. Interesting.
Yeah.
There will not be beer available at the fan day.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Just wanted to drop that note. There may not be beer available at the start of the season. The Tennessean puts an article out this morning. Want a beer at the first Vols football game? UT says, don't get your hopes up. Isn't that coming up soon, the permit meeting?
Isn't it tomorrow?
Is it tomorrow? Is it the 16th or the 18th?
Oh, yeah, 16th.
Okay.
Hopefully they're just lowering expectations. This is like Butch Jones coming out before the season and saying,
well, this is a good idea. It's better than the alternative.
Yeah.
Here are the story highlights. Despite vendors' plans, UT Knoxville might not be ready to sell beer at the first football game. The university is on board with the vendors' plans, but must figure out ways to implement said plans. Just because beer might not be available at the first game does not mean, however, they won't have it available later in the season. Alcohol sales could start as early as August 3rd at Thompson Bowling Arena.
Whoa.
For an Alice Cooper concert.
Oh, okay.
So
I won't be at that.
King Koopa coming in. Going to have beer in Thompson Bowling. Not sure how that's possible, but 100 yards away at the football stadium, not going to have beer.
Just buy some coolers.
No cans. So you'd have to have them open up. Just get a bigger cup so you can foam it up a little bit and pass them off.
Yes,
right? Vince Carilli, Vice Chancellor for Student Life, which is weird to me that the Vice Chancellor of Student Life is the guy.
Wait,
over
the beer guy?
It seems like it.
Okay.
Kind of strange, right?
Yeah, yeah. They do realize that the first three games are all home games, right?
Yes. And the first one is a nooner. Or no, 3:30.
3:30. Chattanooga's at noon.
Right. If they don't have beer for the BYU game, I'm going to be very disappointed.
I mean, I feel like
not
it's
that
either,
I could drink it, but I just feel like that would be the perfect, like, hey, welcome to our town where we're drunk before the game and we drink in the game.
I feel like they're either going to have it ready for the first game or it's going to be
some
October.
Coffee, it's decaf, I swear.
Not. Or it's going to be October 5th when Georgia comes in, halfway through the season. Because what's the point in rushing it for, you know, Chattanooga?
That's so, because it's a noon game and you'd sell a ton. It's going to be hot. People want a nice cold brew.
I just know how people work. Like, if they don't make it for the first game, not going to be like, I doubt it's going
to,
one more week makes a difference.
I want to see NFL numbers on beer sales as the temperatures drop. Because I'm telling you, if I'm sitting there for the Kentucky game
or the Vanderbilt
game.
Is there a bad temperature for beer, though? Like, if it's a
great
day.
Not a bad temperature, but I don't want to be sipping a cold beer when it's 30 degrees at the game.
Yeah. Well, we don't usually have very many 30-degree games here. Now, up in Buffalo and all that stuff, yeah,
I'm just saying, it gets colder as the season goes on.
Mm-hmm.
You would think like you would want to have a bunch of ice cold beers available for games 1, 2, and 3 because it's going to be those would be the hottest three games of the year.
But if it's 67 degrees on August 5th and Georgia rolls in, people are going to really enjoy a nice, yeah, nice beer with perfect weather. I think only when it gets super cold does it.
I'm just saying you're missing three games where it's going to be hot and people are going to like die for a nice cold beer. Anyway, here's what Vince Carilli said. Honestly, I don't know if we can get there. Would we strive to? Perhaps. But if we're not ready, we're not ready. Good stuff there. Aramark going to the beer board is just one step in the process because they have to do what they have to do from a policy and procedures perspective. If that doesn't happen, we can't sell it anyway. So basically they could get denied the permit tomorrow and all of this is moot. But that is step one, get the permit.
How do you get denied a permit? I mean,
I don't know. I don't know. You probably have to have all of your plans and procedures in place, and then they say, oh, yeah, we like what you're doing here. We think you can serve alcohol in a professional and legal way. We like the checks and balances you have in place to make sure that alcohol is not getting in the hands of those who should not be drinking it. Yeah, because no one illegally drinks at a football game. That's never happened. It'll take some time for Aramark, Tennessee's food and beverage vendor, and the university to work out effective ways to implement their plan. Aramark and the university are both on board with plans to sell beer at concession stands reserved for alcohol sales, but they have yet to determine how many stands there will be and where they will be located. Another part of the plan is for the university to deploy people into the stands to check for underage consumption, but the university still has to figure out the associated costs and how people will be deployed, not to mention extra security measures and the workers Aramark will have to hire and train to serve said beer. Carilli said there's a gazillion moving parts. And this guy works for a university, so you know he's not lying about the number. A gazillion. And logistics can become quite complicated with 100,000 people packed inside Neyland Stadium. You don't want to do it wrong. You don't want your fans to be disappointed with how you're rolling it out, but you also need to make sure you're doing it in a safe manner as well. I'm glad that they're thinking about this because it would be a nightmare if the first time you can get beer, there's two stations and the line wraps halfway around the damn stadium and someone has to wait in line an hour to get a beer. And you can bet that the first couple times beer's available, that's exactly what's going to happen. People are going to want to say, I got one of the first beers in Neyland. Oh, my God. So, yeah, I think it's smart of them to think, how can we do this? Because I would say you're not going to need as many beer stands next year as you will this year because it's new, right? People want to do the thing that they haven't been able to do, and then they'll realize, okay, this is exactly what I thought it would be. I pay way too much for a beer. It's pretty good. Now I'll probably pass on the next one. But for the first game that they sell it, of course, yeah, you probably want to have some extra hands on deck to make sure that this thing goes smoothly. Also, if I were them, I don't know why you wouldn't do what everybody else does and bring in those like portable kiosks with the beer instead of taking over existing concession stands whose lines are already long and they're just selling Coke and popcorn. Like, if you want Coke and popcorn and candy, you should go to these concessions. And if you want a beer, you should have separate concession stands located throughout the stadium. Pay these prices and please pay.
How long have we been talking about this? At least a month now?
We know how this is going to work. I'm surprised that they can't figure it out.
I feel like at least they're thinking about it already.
Well, he mentioned it, and I'd say this is probably a big deal. Tennessee's trying to figure out how they can spend the least money on the front end, so they don't like. In Tennessee's mind, the worst thing they could do would to be have like too many concession stands and have to train one too many people, which is impossible. Like you're going to pay it off in the first hour that you can sell beer. Like it's all going to be taken care of. And then if you need less as the season goes on, you just tell people, hey, probably good this week on, 12 beer stands instead of 15 or 16 or whatever. But my guess is they're trying to make sure that they don't pay too many people to be trained and to do this for the first time, which is silly because by doing that, you might miss out on it. Because I'm telling you, man, that first game, if people are having to wait, you're missing sales. Every time someone steps out of line because it's too long or moving too slow, that's money out of your pocket. So I don't know if you're UT, why you wouldn't say anybody who wants a beer should be able to get one in under 10 minutes. Like that should be our goal. That's your goal. From the time they get up to their seat to purchasing the beer should be 10 minutes.
It's not unreasonable.
But, no, it's not. But my guess is they're going to try to penny pinch this thing and overthink it to where they think they have it all worked out, and then they're not going to have any. I mean, this is the same university that runs out of water on a hot day. Water.
Yeah.
Which is bottled and cannot go bad. Water. They run out of water. So they're going to find a way to mess this up. And it's going to be a damn shame. Unless they use this time wisely, which it sounds like they're at least trying to. Maybe. But I agree with you, Billy. Like, this is not that hard of a thing. And I would rather go over the top for the first couple and then trim as needed, as opposed to having people stand in line in the concourse when it's 100 degrees and all they want is a cold beer and can't get one. My guess is, too, the people you want to talk about alcohol-related incidents? Put a drunk guy in a line that's not moving when it's hot and he just wants a beer. That's going to cause some incidents. I want this to go quickly. It needs to move fast. Super, super quick. Maybe you could have a cash-only line. Maybe you could have a card-only line. Make it a nice round number. Boom, boom, boom.
Yep.
You gave me a 10, here's $2 back. You gave me a 20, here's $4 back because you got two beers. They need to make it quick. They need to be smart here.
A&M's going to do it. Have we heard, is anybody else A&M, announced that they're definitely doing it?
A&M's not doing it, I thought.
South Carolina's not doing
South Carolina's
it.
Not doing
South Carolina,
it.
Georgia, Alabama, and I thought A&M said they were not doing it.
Pretty sure A&M was the one that said we're good to go.
They're good to go?
Texas A&M becomes first SEC football team to allow stadium-wide, yada, yada, yada. June 14th. They lifted the ban, and 2 weeks later, A&M said, we're good to go. Going to have it done.
That's how you do it.
You just say you're good to go, and then you have a month to create a plan that's unbreakable. I mean, like, you know, a good, solid plan where people aren't waiting over.
Yeah, like, minutes. I just don't know why this is so hard.
And then, like, I mean, even to your point, like, overpay for the first 2 weeks, like 10 people, 20 people more than you're supposed to have, and then just you made your money back and then cut them. It's that simple.
Move them around. Stat, you know.
Yeah, do whatever you need to do.
You're off this game, but you're back on next game. You don't want to hire someone and then immediately fire them. But I think you'd be better. Again, you're better off going over the top. Also, there are plenty of people in this town who know how to pour a beer. Like,
yeah.
You could go get somebody and say, hey, for this first game, we were wondering if you'd be willing to help us out. We'll give you, I don't know, $100.
You could probably keep them around. You could probably overstaff for the entire season and still make enough money.
Oh, you definitely could. No,
well, no matter what, you're going to end up in the positive. I mean, there's not a lot of overhead here, especially with what you're charging for a beer.
The problem is they're arguing over who's going to make the money and how and who and distributors and who's the official craft beer. And, you know, like that's the problem. It's not that you can't set up the kiosk.
So you think they're not even talking about what the issues
are. Yeah, they're talking about how do we make the most money, and then they have to line up partners, and you know, you start calling people and asking, are you coming on board? Are you committed? Or you know, what's the deal? And they say, well, this needs to be the split, and like, well, we can't do that split. We got to do this. That's what takes time. And they'll use this whole beer permit thing as a kind of a smoke, you know, shield.
Brian Hunsucker tweets in, can you not just have guys walking up and down the stands selling beer, yelling, get your cold beer, like they do at baseball games? No, you cannot.
You can't.
The SEC said no. No walking the aisle vendors, which is fine because I actually don't like that. I don't like it when there's guys always just walking up and down screaming at me. I'm trying to watch a game, man. I'm trying to watch a game. If you want something, get up off your butt and go get it. That's what I've always said.
Yeah, baseball is the perfect sport to do that because it's slow. It's
slow enough. Yes, it's slow enough. There's many, many breaks between innings and between half innings, and so it makes some sense.
What if you only had the walkers during timeouts and they had to be back in the tunnel by the time the game started? I mean, those timeouts are long, man. Like, so, I mean, they down
yeah,
back.
Timeout and a quarter break, half
quarter break especially, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
And those guys that are carrying that stuff could just be working one of those kiosks the whole rest of the game. And, I mean, you can watch the game right there on the TV.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. During a timeout, everyone's in the stands anyway. So you just take one of these extra guys, strap a little thing on them, and tell them to go get it. Or, hell, they could just stand at the top of some of the steps and just say, hey, we're not going to walk the aisles, but you can go to the top of your section.
It'd be like the kiosk would be moved into the section for a minute and a half. Yeah. You even have the countdown timer now. You know, hey,
that's a good point
buddy,
for you. Yeah.
You got to get out of here. Game's about to start again.
And then they could even have like a green flag and a red flag. They put the green flag up, they can sell. As soon as the timer goes out, you pop the red flag up and walk out. And he can't yell and he can't sell.
Yeah, quit yelling at the guy. He's getting out of the way so we can watch the game.
And at that point, he just says, sorry, can't sell it. You got to come up here with
me. Meet me up here. Yeah,
meet me in the concourse. Boom, money. They are probably also worried about guys skimming off the top. Like, how do we keep people from, you know, just saying.
They have all that logistics built in already, though, for Coke.
No, like, I know.
It shouldn't be that hard.
I agree.
I'm with Billy. I think
we're all with
each
other.
Well, I was just saying, I agree with his point that you could figure this out. If they really had to get it done.
Your point is a good one, though. They are trying to figure out mm-hmm. how they can make the most money. And if that takes a little longer, then they would. It's weird, but that's what they'll do. They'll totally sabotage themselves for the first game if they don't like the numbers.
Wouldn't it be smart for them just to sign a 1-year contract with a vendor and then say, look at what we did. Now it's a bidding war for years 2 through 10 or however you want to do it.
Yeah, this isn't like another business venture where like it might go south. Like you're not going to look. You know there's going to be a lot of beer. You're not going to sell beer all day and be like, golly, we only sold 80 units. Like, what the hell? We're going to go out of business. That ain't happening.
I mean, and there's data for this, right? Like, just – any NFL game should give you a good percentage point, right? Okay, we called the Dallas Cowboys, and on a game that was played in September, even though it's an indoor stadium, they sold this many. The numbers are pretty balanced here, so let's start there and then see what happens.
Yeah,
and
hell, call Nashville and Atlanta if you want like regional representation.
Exactly.
And stuff.
It's really not that hard, but it seems like Tennessee is going to Tennessee it a little bit and make it a little bit harder than it should be. They get it squared away, and hopefully you're right. They're just kind of sandbagging a little bit and then going to be surprised.
I mean, would you rather them have South Carolina this thing and said, hey, we're not going to be ready. We're just don't even get your hopes up, but at some point we might be. But I don't know. Did they say for the whole year, or did they just say not to start the season? I mean, I guess it's a little better for them to say we're going to do everything we can, but it might not happen. Just to hold out that maybe it gets done. But it is kind of frustrating that if A&M can do it, why can't we do it?
It's amazing to me that they didn't have this already done,
right?
Frankly.
Because they approved the bill passed for Tennessee a long time ago.
I'm not 100% sure of that.
Yeah, that's – well, I just saw
– I don't dis- – I
saw
don't
some
not believe
old
you. I
headlines.
Just
it was like in March, I think. Okay. That's why at Thompson Bowling for a non-UT event, they're ready to go with that.
Correct, which is why Alice Cooper is going to have beer.
So as soon as that passed, like...
Well, they said that it might, which is kind of weird.
The
non-sanctioned events, as far as UT, like, yeah, they're good to go there. It's also a lot easier to have beer for the arena than it is for the football stadium as far as just numbers and those types of logistics. But I'm still surprised. Like, you knew this was coming down the pike. How many years have we spent doing a couple segments a year on this very topic? You would think during the summer when it's slow, you would just give this project to a couple of people and say, hey, by the way, start researching this. If we are allowed to sell beer at Neyland Stadium, call some people. See what the guidelines are. Let's see what the, you know, we need to do shipping and what devices do we need to move pallets of beer in and around the arena? Do we have enough elevators? Where should we load it? Where should we unload it? Where can we keep it? Again, it's not hard. It just does take some time, and I get that, but why did we not already use the time we had instead of back-ending ourselves right up against the season? Might not have it for the first game. Might have to roll it out for game 3, 4, 5, something like that. Again, they should have had this done.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I mean, I don't know.
We were too worried about setting up the summer of Smokey. We didn't worry about beer sales. I mean, something that makes you literally $0. You spend a lot of time on, but $7 beers in a place where you could sell easily 10,000 a game, if not way more. We can't think about that. We can't think about possibly.
If there's $7 beers, how many are you buying per game? Are you buying any? Are you buying two? Are you buying one?
Probably just one. Maybe two if it's really hot. I don't know what the percentage is of people in the stadium who would have a beer at the game. I mean, again, this is college football. This isn't, you know, like basketball, you kind of just show up for the game.
Yeah.
A lot of people for football games, you know, it's an all-day event.
Right. They've already been drinking beer.
I'd say for a noon game, though, you know, there's not as much time to pregame. A lot of people are going to get into the stadium and say, well, I didn't have to buy a bunch of tailgate food, and I didn't have to do this and that, so I'll probably splurge and have a couple beers or three beers at the game since I didn't have my pregame time. But, I, you know, for like a night game or something, yeah, probably not going to sell as many. People are already lubricated.
Not especially a noon game against Chattanooga. If it's,
I mean, I just got a tweet from a guy that said, I'm waiting on buying my Vol Pass to see if they're going to sell beer or not. I mean, there are people who are like, I'm not going to, maybe they've never had tickets before, and this would be something that would get them into the stadium. Hey, if I can have a cold beer and watch the Vols, yeah, I'm going to get that Vol Pass. But if I can't, I'll just drink a beer at my house, watch a game on TV. You know, it's HD now. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, I don't know, it seems like this is not a problem Tennessee should be having, but of course, that's the problem we always seem to have. The easiest decisions become the most difficult for us to work out sometimes.
Lots more to get to on the program. We roll on hour number two. Stick with us right here on Fan Run Radio. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios. Three and Out rolls on here. Hour number two. Nate Hodges, Houston Kress, and Billy Williford with you. It's interesting, you can go to the ticket website now and see the entire map of the stadium, see what's available and what's not. So,
see anything you like?
That's a thing. Well, here's what I thought was really, really interesting. The south upper level shows no season tickets available. But you know why that is?
Visiting section? Vol Pass?
Vol Pass. And four-pack South Carolina promo deal with hot dogs and drinks and all that kind of stuff. So I guess they've kind of taken that section where they know, like, people probably aren't going to,
they'll probably open it up if they have,
if they fill up the rest.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If they need it, they can open it up, but they're saving it right now in the meantime.
There are season tickets available all over the lower level.
Not surprised.
Yeah. I mean,
people are kind of out.
Section, I mean, they got some in Section D right on the 50. They got some, I mean, they got them available all over the, even the west side of the stadium, which is crazy. And the entire lower deck in the north end zone is all just green with available tickets. I guess we're in a prove it year, aren't we? Just where we are.
Yeah. Safe to say that.
Yeah.
People are on the fence.
So, and I do wonder how many people, you know, you got the DM, hey, I'm waiting on the Vol Pass, see if they're going to sell beer. I mean, that's not a deal breaker. Like, I wouldn't make a ticket purchasing decision based off of that, but I would at least like the option. I mean, I like, you know, go to Ice Bears game. Like, I like to be able to buy a beer or even, you know, just a drink. Is that, can they sell wine also? And then what about liquor? Is that a thing? I thought on the A&M deal.
No liquor.
It said they were going to sell wine.
It's what you can buy at a gas station.
Okay.
So
yeah, wine, beer and wine for A&M.
Yeah. That's SEC wide. I don't think I think the SEC said no liquor.
Okay. So A&M has come out and said they're going to have beer and wine sales to the public across the whole stadium. I guess they're the only ones that's officially announced that. I mean, we expect LSU to be good to go, though, right?
Yeah.
Like,
well, A&M's probably thinking, we're going to have it no matter what, and if it stinks, we'll fix it. Whereas Tennessee's like, well, we're only going to do it if it's perfect. But I argue that some is better than none. So I would have, like, instead of more beer and fewer stations, I would have less beer and more stations. And then if you sell out, you sell out. Hey, you didn't get your beer in time? Sorry, that's on you. We made it available to you at a bunch of different spots. You didn't have to wait in line. We just happened to run out, which would be a great problem for Tennessee, except then they'd only have a week to refill the beer coffers. Did you see the NCAA video game simulation of the 2019 season? Have you seen that? 24/7 Sports put it out.
I feel like I saw the headline, but I can't remember the results.
I'll say this. If that's the season we're destined for, gonna need a lot more beer.
Oh, really?
Than you think.
Was it that?
Yeah, it's bad.
The record was bad.
The games
were close,
but the record was bad. I would not know how to feel after a season like this. I would not feel great. I would not feel great. But I would feel maybe there's a silver lining. But, yeah, I would want to have a lot of beers available for my people who came to these types of games. And I'd probably want to say I'll sell them after the game because there's going to be a lot of heartbroken people walking out of that that stadium.
Mm. Well,
are you ready for this?
The deets.
So Tennessee went 5-7 last year. The NCAA simulation has Tennessee going 5-7 this year.
Oh, no.
I did the same simulation last year, and my game went 6-6 with a bowl win. Hmm. So it wasn't.
So they were actually worse than the yep. So if they're worse than this one, we're looking for a new coach.
Could be.
Well, that's exciting. Last year, 5-7, upset win against Auburn, upset win against Kentucky, but 6 losses by at least 25 points. With the staff upgrades, with talent upgrades, the 2019 season still going 5-7. I believe this was done with assumed wins in non-conference games against Georgia State, Chattanooga, and UAB. So they simulated the other 9.
If we're only winning 2 other games, I think you better run the UAB numbers again. I mean, they were pretty good last year for their level.
Well, but those are all like 20-something plus on the line. So I think those, okay. They're like, we're not going to simulate. I don't know why they wouldn't just simulate them. You can simulate a game in like 15 seconds.
It's a computer, yeah.
It's not great, but here we go. Tennessee 38, BYU 28. 2-0 to start the season.
All right.
Actually, 3-0 because they assumed the win against Chattanooga. So you're 3-0.
You're 3-0?
Headed to the swamp. Feeling good.
Yeah?
Game in the swamp. Florida 41, Tennessee 34 in overtime. Tennessee takes a 24-17 lead on a long touchdown pass to Marquez Callaway. Florida responds to tie the game. They have an interception at its own goal line early in the fourth quarter. Sounds very familiar.
It was a really bad throw by Garantano there.
MVP.
I actually watched the simulation.
The Gators drive and take the lead, and Callaway responds with another touchdown.
Wait, are you serious?
Florida takes the lead on a long field goal with 45 seconds left, but Tennessee, they run down the field and force overtime with a field goal of their own as time expires.
Samaglia.
In OT. Felipe Franks runs for a touchdown on Florida's possession, and Jarrett Garantano is picked off to end the game. Tennessee rolled up nearly 600 yards of offense, but turned the ball over 5 times.
Not all 5 interceptions.
I'd have to check the stats on that one.
Billy's watched the simulation. He wasn't kidding.
Oh, yeah, they did have a video.
Actually watched it.
It's weird, Billy. Florida 41, Tennessee 34 in OT. Tennessee needs a bounce-back win against Georgia to start feeling good about themselves again. Tennessee leads for nearly the entire first 3 quarters.
Oh, my God.
Tim Jordan's touchdown run and touchdown catches from Marquez Callaway and Jordan Murphy help the Vols take advantage. They're up 14-6. They're up 21-12 and 28-19. They're up 28-19 until an ill-advised, only in a video game, interception by Jarrett Garantano swings the game midway through the third quarter. Georgia converts the points. Jake Fromm runs it in for a touchdown. Georgia leads 29-28. And then on Tennessee's next series, Garantano is picked again on a bubble screen. The Bulldogs return the interception for a touchdown to seal the 36-28 victory inside Neyland Stadium.
Oh, wait, there was another interception.
That game ends with another Garantano interception.
How many interceptions does he throw in this season?
I don't know.
Go look those stats up. JG.
Would Anderson miss the block on that bubble screen?
Mm-hmm. you're
looking
your
good,
people
Billy.
Are not good.
Looking good. Mississippi State 27, Tennessee 20. Mississippi State scores to open the game and then turns a Tennessee fumble inside the 5-yard line. I'd love to know who fumbled. I have to guess.
Jeremy
into
Banks.
A long scoop and score touchdown. It was our 5-yard line. So we're driving in for a score and they go 95 yards the other way. Awesome. Trailing 20-6 in the fourth quarter. The Vols mount a rally. Garantano to Juwan Jennings back at the end zone. Touchdown. Tim Jordan ties the game with a minute 43. However, Mississippi State on their ensuing possession gets a long pass play to Malik Deer, puts him in business. They score the game-winning touchdown on a Kylan Hill run with just 11 seconds left on the clock to deal Tennessee another last-second loss. Alabama 36, Tennessee 33. Tennessee jumps out to a 14-6 lead. Bama responds to take a 15-14 lead into the half. Trailing 21-20 entering the fourth quarter, the Vols go back in front 26-21 on a Garantano to Juwan Jennings touchdown pass. Sounds like Juwan Jennings is a baller in this game. My MVP. The Crimson Tide retake the lead on Tungavaloa bomb to Henry Ruggs. They convert the two-point conversion. They lead 29-26 with 5 minutes to go. After regaining the lead on a touchdown pass to Latrell Bumpus, who's playing defensive end in real life, Tennessee forces a fourth down stop inside the 10. There's 2 minutes and 22 seconds to go. However, Tennessee can't hold on. They go three and out. Thank you. Complete with a third down pass that should have been intercepted. Good job, Billy. And Alabama drives down the field to win the game on a touchdown pass to tight end Miller Forrestall. Again, Tennessee 33, Bama 36.
What's our record at this point?
Not good. Like 3-3 and 4.
3-3. 3-3. Yeah, just Florida.
South Carolina 27, Tennessee 25. Ugh. Basically the same script as the Mississippi State simulation. Carolina jumps out 17-0. Lead 24.
We can't start games? Bro, what are you doing?
Lead 24-7 at the half. We fight all the way back. And with 1 minute and 43 seconds remaining after a touchdown, the two-point conversion pass is batted.
That sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm. Vols get a defensive stop, but on 4th and 18, Garantano is sacked, and Tennessee's hopes of getting in field goal range are dashed. Kentucky 35, Tennessee 28. Kentucky jumps out to a 21-0 lead. Tennessee rallies, falls short in the Commonwealth. Tennessee 38, Missouri 14. We do respond by going in to Columbia, Missouri, and thumping hapless Barry Odom and his Tigers.
Yeah.
Feels good. Feels really, really, really good.
So with a bowl on the line.
Yes.
Vanderbilt.
Yes.
Gotta have it.
Right. The Vols need to win this game to make a bowl. They get off to a good early start with Bryce Thompson's pick six. Tennessee leads early, 14-3 in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Then Josh Palmer hauls in a touchdown pass to make it 21-3.
Oh, yeah, going
to
salvage the season
after
right
the
here.
First quarter. However, the Commodores score just before halftime to cut the lead, 21-17. Getting nervous?
Yeah.
Yeah, you should.
Sweaty palms.
In the fourth quarter, Vanderbilt forces a stop, converts on fourth down near midfield, and takes the lead on a Riley Neal touchdown run. The Vols drive down the field, but have to settle for a field goal after getting stuffed on third and one. They tie the game at 24 with a minute 29 to go. The game ends up in overtime, and after Tennessee kicks a field goal, Vanderbilt wins the game on a Keyshawn Vaughn touchdown run. No bowl. Vanderbilt wins in Neyland. Tennessee 5-7 with losses of 3 points, of 7 points, of 2 points, of 3 points, of 7 points, of 8 points, of 3 points. You don't lose by more than 8, but you go 5-7.
I hate it. We'll come back with more. We're going to give you our full takes. Stick
five
with
and
us.
5-7 again!
Final
no!
segment, hour number 2. Back at you next.
But it was positive progress in the total score for and against.
Final segment, hour number 2. Getting some good reaction on the video game simulation talk. Fall Nation Recruiting said, did the exact same Florida UT sim yesterday, and it ended very scary, similar outcome with Florida winning in double OT. It kind of leads into the question. We were talking about this during the break. If you have a season where you go 5-7 or 6-6, but there's a lot of close losses. In my opinion, that's just going to divide the fan base again. Like, it's just going to split the fan base into, see, Pruitt can't get it done. He's losing close games because he's not a good in-game coach. Versus, see, Pruitt's getting us there. We've closed the talent gap. We can now play with Georgia and Florida and, I mean, hell, in this example, Alabama. Just couldn't quite get over the hump this year. Need more time. I mean, it just – right now I feel like the fan base has – there's always differing opinions on everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the fan base is all in wait-and-see mode. Like,
agree.
Like, no matter what you think, you're still in wait-and-see mode. No one's going to say, I'm 100% sure that they're going to win 9 games this year. And no one's saying, I'm 100% sure that Jeremy Pruitt is no good. They'll probably win 4 or 5 games this year, and he's going to get fired the year after that. No one can be sure of either of those outcomes. Everybody's kind of like, well, we'll see how it goes this year. We're finding out where we are, and we'll see how it goes. But if you had that type of year, lots of close losses, a bad overall record, but lots of games where you were like, man, didn't even expect to compete in this one, and we're right here. We're just going to be back kind of into where we're comfortable, I guess, debating.
What would you rather have? 6-6, six losses by a touchdown or less, 8-4, but you get blown out in the four.
By over 20 points.
8-4.
But you feel 0% closer to Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi State.
I think for recruiting and for perception, and I think for kind of everybody pushing in the same direction, I think that gets a little lost over the offseason anyway, and you get excited for the next year. And you think that, in my head, if I'm having to pick, I would rather have the season that kind of makes sense to everybody, that you took a big step forward and that you still need to close talent gaps on certain teams, but you have a coach that's, I mean, right now we can't beat Missouri, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, in the 8-4 scenario, you have at least gotten up to second tier in the East, or, you know, third tier kind of by yourself, but you're still behind Georgia and Florida.
Right.
And you just got killed by both of them in the 8-4 scenario.
And Alabama. And what are we saying? We got killed by Mississippi State?
Yeah.
Or a surprise one of those teams or something? Okay.
We'll say Mississippi State.
But, I mean, if you have to swap it out, that means you beat Mississippi State, so that's good. Which would you prefer?
For the season itself, 8-4, but I think you could probably spin the 6-6 as a more positive season, frankly. If you lose by 3 to Alabama, 4 to Florida, 3 to Georgia, South Carolina by 1, Mississippi State by 1, and then, I don't know, Missouri by a touchdown, it's like, man, we're right there.
People will be positive going into
the next season.
You're going
bowling, and you think, wow, we are so close to so many good teams. Whereas 8-4 feels great at the time because you're 8-4. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the season, you're thinking, man, we've still got so far to go to catch the people we need to catch. Like in this scenario, 6-6, worst record, but you feel closer to being great than 8-4 and getting killed in the four. I'd still probably take the 8-4. It's still positive progress. You're selling 8 wins instead of 6. But I do wonder if in this scenario, if it played out, would we actually feel better about the team moving forward in the 6-6 scenario? I mean, I think you can sell close losses to really good teams a lot easier than blowout losses. And 2 wins over 2 games that really don't matter.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Let's go to
It's basically, do you want to be Butch Jones in year 3? Or do you want to be Nick Saban in year 1? 6-6, didn't lose a game by more than a touchdown. Butch Jones goes 8-4, and then he goes 8-4 again, yeah. And then you go 4-8. I don't know, man. I want more wins. Winning is fun, but getting killed in the losses is not great. It would be nice to watch every game and know you were in it the whole time. But it would also be very frustrating to lose that many close games, because we always say it. What does it mean in close games? What shows up the most? Coaching. Scheme. Planning, the ability to finish. So there would be a lot of questions as far as, can this team finish, or are they destined to be Buzz Peterson? Always close, can't quite pull it out at the buzzer.
Let's go to the Nextdoor Home Group hotline. 865-546-8200 is the number. We got Connor from Nashville. What's up, Connor?
Hey, fellas. Morning. How you doing?
Morning, Connor.
Hey, what interests me about this simulation is, you know, I guess all the rosters in this kind of situation, as I understand, are pretty fan-made. So all the ratings are subject to somebody, you know, just doing it out of hobby. But what I find interesting about this simulation is that they think that we have the talent to compete with Alabama all of a sudden. And I'm, like, no offense, but I was not expecting us to be there this fast. So that, I mean, I'm just shocked that we're hanging in there so close. Like, no losses more than 8 wins, and that's just assuming that we have the talent to pull that off. And I'm just kind of taken aback and shocked by that right now.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like at the 6-6, sure, it's 2 less wins, but man, you feel like your roster is there to compete with anybody and everybody in the SEC, which is probably top to bottom the best conference in the country. So
right, exactly.
It's like that would feel good. In a way, it would feel better than going 8-4 and then getting creamed in the 4. But I do like the wins. I like the winning. I would like to be able to say at the end of this season, Jeremy Pruitt in year 2 matched Butch Jones in years 3 and 4. You would still think that you're going in the right direction, and I do think 8-4 would sell on the recruiting trail. But it would also mean that your roster is further away from the top than if you went 6-6 with all close losses.
Do you think if we went 5-7 with that many close losses, do you think that's still a recruiting pitch, hypothetically, to people?
Yeah, I do. I think not making a bowl game obviously hurts. It hurts in recruiting, and it hurts your current roster because you don't get those extra bowl practices. But I do think that if you go 5-7 and don't make a bowl and all these games are this close, like a 3-point loss on the road to Alabama, a 3-point loss in overtime to Florida, like that doesn't sting quite as bad at the end of the season as it does at the time. At the time, you're heartbroken, right? At the time, you're thinking, we could have had this game, we should have had this game. But at the end of the season, you look back and say, okay, we still return a lot of these guys. They should all be better. It was year 2 for Jeremy Pruitt. He can take a big step forward. And if he doesn't at that point, okay, you knew the roster was talented enough to compete. You didn't take a big step forward. I think you would have good data. Whereas if you go 8-4 and get blown out, you have to kind of go 8-4 again and then close the gap on those 4. Thanks for the call, Connor. So this is a heart and head debate of philosophy, and I honestly don't know what I think. At the end of the season, looking back on it, 8-4 on the record, on the ledger, looks great. But looking ahead to 2020, the 6-6 might actually be the better selection.
I know in the 6-6 scenario, you're closer to Alabama and Georgia and those teams, but you still lost to Vandy and Kentucky. Right? Is that what we're saying?
That might have just sold me on the 8-4. Like, you just can't lose. You can't be doing that anymore.
Yeah.
Because especially the timeline, right? Because that shows, hey, you were good enough early in the season. Maybe some injuries set in. I don't know.
You could sub a BYU. BYU could have a miracle season and be a lot better than you expected, maybe. You could trade that one for Vandy and say, well, the road trip to Kentucky. I mean, does that change it at all?
I would go 8.
You can't lose to Vanderbilt. If you want to trade BYU for Vanderbilt, it makes the 6-6.
Feel better, right?
Yeah. It would be weird, though, to lose to BYU and then be that close to Florida, that close to Georgia, that close to Alabama.
Right.
That close to Mississippi State. It's like, wait, who are we? That would be very confusing. But at least at that point, you kind of close with, you know, a big win over Missouri and a big win over Vanderbilt if you just flip the score.
I mean, I do agree with you 100% that there's a scenario where the 6-6 is actually better. But I still think you have to take the 8-4.
I think so, too.
I think it's also funny that if somebody just tuned in, they're like, wait a minute. Like, without the contingencies, it's like, wait a minute. Why are they debating whether 6-6 is better or 8-4 is better? Because if you don't put the score, you know,
that's the thing. It's all about the contingency.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of like this past season, right? You got killed by Georgia, Alabama, Florida. But man, that Auburn game, that Kentucky game, like
South Carolina. I mean,
yeah, no, it's like even the close loss to South Carolina. It's like I didn't really know how to feel. Like, who are we? You get blown out by Missouri the week after you handle Kentucky. So it was very confusing. Like, that's, we talked about that last year, right? The team really didn't have an identity. They were just there or they weren't. Basically, mm-hmm. You didn't have any feel for what you were going to get on a given day. You thought you did. I thought Tennessee would play pretty well against Missouri. Now, in that game, obviously, Garantano got hurt. But he wasn't hurt against Vanderbilt, and you got shelled. You got smoked at Vanderbilt. Disheartening. I don't know. I hate Tennessee getting blown out. I really do. I like thinking you can compete with everybody. But now, if you said 8-4 or 5-7 with all the close losses, I'm definitely taking the 8-4 then because I think this team needs the bowl practice. But 6-6, it's like, what's the difference really between 6 and 8 wins? I mean, like at the end of the season, well, we're not celebrating 8-4.
Especially if they're close wins over Vanderbilt and Kentucky or close losses, like not that big of a difference really.
That's what I'm saying.
I think it's just beating Kentucky and Vandy.
Yeah, that's big. I'll say I don't know that the at Kentucky game this year is like a must win. I mean, I know Tennessee historically beats Kentucky, but that one does feel like a trap a little bit. You can't lose to Vanderbilt this year. You can't. Like Missouri and Kentucky on the road, those are going to be tough games. Like they just are. But Vanderbilt at home, you cannot lose that game. You absolutely 100% cannot. I would also say that this year you cannot lose to South Carolina at home. Like you've got to step over Will Muschamp and Derek Mason in the East. And if you backslide a little bit against Kentucky and Missouri's a little better than everybody thought, okay, those were road games. You cannot lose to those two teams this year at home if you're Jeremy Pruitt. Like, you just can't. You showed last year you were good enough to beat South Carolina. Weird game plan defensively and a really bad call hurt you. Vanderbilt, you know, showed. You can't do that this year. You got to take the step.
Find a way. We'll kick off hour number three next. Stick with us right here. It's Fox Sports Knoxville.
You're listening to 3.